Well, maybe what I could do is start by asking you specifically. When you wrote Welfare is a Woman's Issue, and it was originally put out by Liberation News Service.
Liz Woman's Magazine.
Oh, you wrote it and sent it to men?
Liz is the one who published the article.
How did you come to write something for men? That was certainly unusual.
Okay. I guess maybe at the time, Ms. was a very new magazine. My article came out in the February issue, which was Ms.'s second issue. And I guess they knew I was the associate director of the National Welfare Rights Organization. I guess I was hot at that time, and of course Gloria Steinem was involved into the women's movement, and they were doing some organizing, and at some point in time we ended up on certain different kinds of committees working around some political issues and what have you, and so they felt that I had something to offer the magazine, and so we did the article.
So you'd had contact with her as a result of being the associate director of the National Welfare
Rights Organization? Well, at first, I was the founder and chairman of the National Welfare Rights Organization, and that's when I met Gloria. And however, I think it was in 71, I retired from national chairmanship and went in to work in the office as associate director to Dr. George Wiley, at that time was the executive director. And I held that position until he resigned December 72, and I picked up the directorship, and which I still hold it primarily in name, but I'm recognized as the executive director. Mm-hmm.
And what was your feeling when you wrote it about the women's movement?
Well, so Welfare Rights was started, the organization itself was started by women, of women, for women, because at the time that the welfare recipients started organizing, there was no place in the union where aid was given to a total family. Even here in California, if the family was a destitute situation, they would not aid if the father was in the home. So fathers had to leave. And I was on welfare myself in the state for 9 years. And prior to then, I had worked in the Nash. I had worked in the laundry for 23 years. So I was used to working
in
Little Rock, Arkansas, where I come from, and here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And then one day I found myself unable to work in the laundry and didn't know nothing else to do. And so I ended up with myself, six children on welfare.
When was that?
1963, 20 years.
So it was just about the time Welfare Rights Organization was...
I started Welfare Rights Organization in 1963. The first group recipients to be organized was ANC Mothers Anonymous right here in Watts, California. And that was organized based on the fact that before I was a welfare recipient myself, I used to hear all kinds of stories from recipients and from people who were against women who were on welfare. And of course, these were women also, and they had some problems with women who were on welfare, and they thought they were lazy, shiftless people. It started all of the welfare recipients on WFBC was black, and they thought that women had babies just to get some welfare. And that when I first heard that, I just didn't know what to think. And then having six children and was not on welfare, I just didn't understand how you would have a baby just to get some welfare. And when I found out in those days you only got a $6 increase in your check, you don't care how many you had. And that just really blew my mind to hear people talk like that. So I used to hear the women complain about how they were treated from the social workers, and how the social worker used to come and visit unannounced. And
this was when you
treated
the midnight race, though, wasn't it?
Yes, and this is a period where I need to get on but don't want to get on. And then finally one day I belonged to a little group in where I lived, the housing project. And the chairman and the secretary of the group found out that I was sick, that I had six children, and they themselves went to the welfare department, made all the contact. In those days, you didn't have no community group to talk to. You could call the supervisor's office, and Mr. Geringer, who was the president of this little community group, called the supervisor Hahn's office and got, who was now Councilman Gilbert Lindsay, and Gilbert at that time was the supervisor, and he told the story to Mr. Lindsay. And of course, when we got to Adams and Grand, they had me ready. They had my patients in process, how many children I had. They had the homework. So Mr. Geringer had done his homework, and he phoned all this into Mr. Lindsay, who's in the supervisor's office. Mr. Lindsay called somebody in Adams and Grand. When I got there, I was ready to go. I got food ordered. I got money for my rent, and I got my application processed.
That kind of world treatment was pretty unusual, wasn't it?
It wasn't unusual. You had to know somebody to know somebody. So you didn't have folks like us in those days to make contact with. Of course, the little group that the President Geringer belonged to was just a little group within the housing project, working with the manager on the concerns of the potential housing project. And I had been working with them, and so they saw that I needed assistance. And I think that after we got organized in 63, that's been a part of my, I felt my responsibility to make sure that folks who needed help got help and not be run around and sent from place to place. And you used to go in the welfare office and sit all day and go back the next day. Unfortunately, I never had to do that.
Well, what gave you the idea then, since you had a fairly good experience, to go ahead and try and form?
But the women around me, but see, there were women I was involved in, my neighbors who lived around me, had experienced the hardship of waiting a long time, not having a person to call the supervisor's office and get in touch with somebody, and they make all of the plans. Because they had not had the organization that I had belonged to around at that time, so they had to go for themselves. And a lot of times social workers mistreated them highly. And they didn't know anybody else to go to. They wouldn't dare try to talk to a supervisor, or they were afraid they would get cut off. And they used to be harassed a lot by social workers. And so the people that were around me were always crying and complaining. And my thing is, look, if you don't like it, you can do something about it.
Now, had you, up to that time, had you been involved in any kind of civil rights activities?
Political activities, yes. I had become a deputy registrar of voters, and in those days, I was a field deputy. I go out and knock on doors, and I had been involved in some political campaigns. And the way I got involved in this little group in the housing project, I just moved in. And one morning, I got up and I found this piece of mail through my mailbox telling me about a meeting down at the Housing Authority. And so I got up to go see what it was all about. And then when I went, I liked what I saw, and I saw what people were trying to do. And even though I worked every day, but they had night meetings. And, of course, it wasn't a problem to go out to a night meeting in those days. So I went to the meeting when I come home from work and got involved with them.
Now, when you worked in the laundry, were you in the union?
Yes, I was in the union here. In fact, when I got sick, I was a shop steward.
Oh, no. What union was it? The
Local 52, laundry, dye house, and dry cleaning workers union. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And did your union experience in any way, do you think, affect your notion of how to organize?
No, it didn't. I don't think so, because I think that my ability to organize and put people together was a natural form of it. No, the union did not have no bearing on, mm-hmm. on that.
Tell me, describe for me, if you could, the step-by-step process that organized the group here in L.A.
Okay, the first thing I done was really amazing. As I said, I was around women who were on welfare way before I met them, and they were always talking about social workers, and they were afraid, you know, to have a boyfriend, because usually the husband had to leave, or they were afraid for some kind of husband would have to slip in. They didn't want to separate, but in order for the family to survive, he would have to say that he's left the house. They used to come in at midnight, and they would look all in the clothes closets, even empty the dirty clothes out of the washing machine. A lot of times, people would put things in the washing machine to store them away. They used to pull those things out, empty the clothes hamper or whatever, looking for men clothing. And if they would find any of such things, they would, the recipient would get a check next month. And they had once a month payments in those days. And I could hear all of this, you know, and I said, now that's something I don't want to be bothered with. But when I was sick one day, and then I had a 14-year-old daughter who had started cutting classes while I would be at work, and the neighbors knew about it, but I didn't. And so one day, Mr. Garinger said, hey, Tillman, get up. We are going down and get you on welfare. And I said, no, we don't need to go to get on welfare, because I have $57 in the bank, and I'm going to get it paid next Thursday. And I'll be ready to go back to work in a few days. And he said, no, your daughter is cutting classes. And I said, she is? He said, yes, she's a junior high school student. You need to be here with your baby. My baby was in Richmond, California, because my people were keeping her because I didn't have no childcare. So he said, you need to bring your baby home. You need to see him right here, make sure your daughter goes to school. So we're going down. And I didn't know that he had made all of these arrangements with Mr. Lindsay. And so when I went, he told the lady that I needed some rent. My rent was $41. He said she doesn't have enough food. So she gave me $26 food order. In those days, $26 was a lot of money. You could buy a lot of food. But this was in early January. In March, I got about $500. They paid me all the way back from January up. And but the problems were the same. So one Sunday, I live right behind the church. Miss Johnson lives right here. She lives over there too. And Miss Johnson lived next door to a neighbor who worked all the time. And in housing project in those days, if you didn't keep your grass watered and green, the men used to come and turn your water hose on, charge you $3.25 for it. So Mrs. Jackson on weekends always kept her sprinkler going. And a lot of times the church didn't have enough parking room for the church people going to church, so they used to park in our parking area in the project. We didn't have cars anyway, but it was there if we had it. This lady had a beautiful black and white 59 Fairlane Ford, and it was looked very good. Even though this was in 63, she had it looking polished and everything. So she parked the car right in front of Miss Jackson's apartment and went on across the street to church. As Mrs. Jackson's sprinkler went around and around, the water went across this hood of this car. And lady came out of church by 1:30, quarter to 2, and saw this water on the hood and just performed. Just walked out of the church, beautiful, had on all that stuff, and just had fit. And she just talked about folks who live in the housing project, but now her car is parked in the housing project. Talked about the folk who lived in the housing project, talked about it, all of them was on welfare, sitting down, the lazy, so and so on, so on her money, and my heart just went crazy. So, Ms. Johnson said to me, did you hear, and I had heard other things similar to that on buses and stuff, did you hear why that woman carried out yesterday? So I said, no. So she went to the house church and got up Tuesday morning, and I went down Tuesday. I was in authority management, Mr. Griggs, and told Mr. Griggs about the incident. And I said, we ought to be able to do something. I suppose ever since I've been out here, I've been hearing women talk about how they treated by the social workers. I said, there's a lot of women say they would take jobs if they had child care, if they had an opportunity to. So Mr. Briggs said, well, what you want to do? I said, what I want, see if I can't pull them together, but I need some help. He said, you go back home, and you find me five other women who think like you, and you bring them back. So I had been acquainted through this little group. I had been acquainted with a couple of ladies that lived farther down in the project. I went by their house, and they wasn't home. So I wrote a note to them and said, meet me at Mr. Gregg's office in the morning at 9:30. And then I came home to my apartment, and I had a girlfriend that I met when I first came to California. I went over to her house and I called, asked her, will she go? She said yes. And then there was a lady next door to me who had some problems. They had really done her in. She had one child, and she used to try to work, you know, to make ends meet. And then somebody claimed that the man was staying in the house, and they had an investigation and all that kind of stuff. So she said, yes, she would go. And it was a young lady lived behind me whom I knew in Arkansas when she was a little girl. And I went over and asked her, was she on welfare? She said, yes. So will you go with me in the morning? She said, yes. And that's how we got to Mr. Gregg's office. Mrs. Hickey and Mrs. Frazier came based on a note I left at their house. And they just came to see what I wanted. And when we got there, I told them what I was there for. And we got in, and we went in to sit down and talk with the management. And those days, the program wasn't called AFDC because it was called Aid to Needy Children. So when you apply for apartment in the housing project, if you were working, you know, it was in your folder. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't on there, he said they used to have in their folder, it says ANC. So Mr. Green had a stack, the manager had a stack of folders on his desk. And the phone rang, somebody needed to speak to them. So he wouldn't take it in his office. There was a little phone on a table right outside his door. So he excused himself, went out the door, closed the door, to talk on the telephone. So somebody looked over on his desk and said, ANC, and we grabbed his folder, and one got a pencil, and we got a name and an address, because we knew he was on welfare, because it had ANC in the corner, right? So we got about 9 or 10 names off of that desk right quickly, but he called us in this folder. And he lied. He said, you can't do anything with that. So we didn't say nothing. We said, you want death. So he didn't know we had this now. Well, we took those 9 addresses and names, and we went to the ladies' house. We scared a lot of them because they didn't know where we were. And of course, we had, in those days, your check used to come, but your mothers couldn't get medical services. You tear this end off and you use that for your children to get medical services. They didn't give us no medical services at all. So we always kept these little cards because we had to. So we went in and showed the other mothers that we were on welfare too, and nobody sent us. Some joined with us and some said they were afraid. So we didn't bother with them. And then one day, sitting in my at my dining room table, the lady named Adelphia Hickey, she's now attending Southwest College and she got her AA, I believe, in journalism, but she's finishing something up over there.
I think she came to school.
She did.
Yeah, yeah.
She writes, and she always did write very well. So she's sitting at my dining room table where I fry some chicken one day. And we was thinking about, now how do we move this? And so I said, hey, write this down. And as I said the word, she wrote them, she put them down. And we drafted this letter, and the letter said, dear Mrs. John Doe, you are requested to come to the office, housing authority, at a time, certain date, certain time to discuss your lease and your rent. We took it to the manager and I asked him, will he sign it? And he said, you know, yeah, I'll sign it. If I have to leave here tomorrow, I will sign it. He signed his name, U.S. Leagues. What he done was, he said, I can't give you a listing. That's breaking our confidentiality. What I will do is have my secretary to type in the names of the letters, which you have to mail me, son. Thank you, Mr. Higgins. He had his secretary to pull every AFDC file, type the names on the letter. I never will forget there was somebody, a night school principal at Jordan High School, provided us with the envelopes and stamps. He knew Mr. Griggs. They gave us the stacks. We took them home to mail them, but we had sense enough to build us a vast before we mailed him. Then he let us set up an interview booth on the patio. The housing authority's big patio down at the office. So,
is this the Go-Wheel?
No, Richardson Gardens, right at between Compton and Central on Imperial Highway. So we go down Wednesday morning, is our first day. We go set up our table. We gave us some chairs and sit on the patio so we wouldn't interfere with their business. And them ladies came, ladies, because they don't know what you're talking about, my lease and my rent. You know, we're talking about the money, and we're talking about where you live. Everybody showed up. We had 3 days of interview.
How many people were
there? More than 300.
Oh.
Yes. Showed up and they was nervous and they thought they was coming to talk to Mr. Griggs and they was coming to talk to us.
And how many of you were doing it? It started to get bad.
And how many of you were doing the interview?
Oh, the original six that got started. And the other 5 women, including myself. Yeah. Hmm.
You don't have a machine around, do you?
Mm-mm. Okay. As long as it's flashing, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we talked about what we talked about before it went bad. Then you had about 300 that you interviewed all together.
Yes, for that particular housing project. And of course, then we went on to Imperial Housing, which is a fairly large housing. And then they had 2 small housing projects, Hacienda Village and Avalon Gardens, which they had a few welfare recipients there. So the management there was supportive of us, like the first manager was. So she sent out a letter with her name on it also, with the same letter, just different manager name. And, you know, and we've done the interviews there. And then that's when we became ANC Mothers mm-hmm. Anonymous.
Oh, well, you started to tell me when it looked like it went bad, how you came up with, I asked if you'd had a name when you were doing this, you started to tell me about the celebration you had.
The celebration after we pull off the interviews and we felt very good about ourselves and we felt like we had accomplished. And then we felt like we ought to be a bona fide or organized organization. So we had a meeting one evening at one of the ladies' house. In fact, Ms. Higgins' house, we did all our writing. And we had us a little hors d'oeuvres and fancy stuff that one of the secretary that was elected had somebody and worked in the catering, I believe. And they gave us a big tray of hors d'oeuvres and stuff. And so we had our little election that day and elect all our officers that evening. And then we came up with our name, and we named the organization after the program at that time, which was Aided to Native Children program. And we named our organization ANC Mothers Anonymous, which means Aided to Native Children mm-hmm. Mothers Anonymous.
Yeah.
And that was still in 63?
That was in 63.
Uh-huh.
To our knowledge, we are the first welfare recipient group to ever be organized by welfare recipients, for welfare recipients, of welfare recipients. It was not a shame or afraid to say we are on welfare, but we would like to do better.
And how many, when you finally got to that point of picking the name and everything, how many of you were there?
Who were active? Who also, but maybe about 15,
mm-hmm.
20.
Mm-hmm.
But we did different kinds of things. Of course, by then, the news, we stayed underground for about 18 months. Because a lot of people that we interviewed still wasn't satisfied with our explanation. Thought we were from the welfare departments, and they called us social workers and folks, and the social workers didn't know what they was talking about. And then they wanted to investigate us, and you know, it was fine. We didn't have anything to hide.
What were you doing for money for things like postage and your mailings and all
we
that?
We solicited monies. Like, for instance, as I told you, the principal of the Knight High School gave us the postage for our first mailing. And we got the paper from the housing authorities. And, then I would go down to the congressman's office and ask Mr. Williams for some paper, and we get some pencils from somewhere. And that's what we and we still solicited. We never had any money.
And how about people like Gus Hawkins? And did you get
always
help?
Always been supported from the congressman. He was just elected the year before, and his AA, well, all the AAs he's ever had have always been supportive of us, people that we could call on. We are, at that time, Reverend Carroll had just become the first black assemblyman from our area, who is now Congressman Mervyn Dimley, was an assemblyman in this particular area. So we always had. In fact, well, the first time we ever decided we were going to get an office, who's now Congressman Dimley, gave us our first March rent on the building on Central Avenue.
And what was your connection to any of the church groups or the other civil rights organizations?
Never had any. We didn't have any church group connections. You see, what you got to remember, as I said, Pastor Farrell was very, very good and supportive, but he's just the kind of a man he was. But you got to remember, the lady who called everybody names just walked out of his church that Sunday. So those folks didn't have any, nothing good to say about people who were on welfare, who women were on welfare. And these were other women who didn't have nothing good to say about women who were on welfare. So we had no church groups helping, and I think that's what's made our organization rather unique. I need to
have some extra.